Let's now begin with Nada Hashimi. He's joining us now. He's a professor of Middle East and Islamic politics at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He is the author of Islam, Secularism, and Liberal Democracy, Towards a Democratic Theory for Muslim Societies, and the co-editor of a new book, The People Reloaded, The Green Movement, and the Struggle for Iran's Future. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nada Hashimi.
Happy to be with you.
And clearly, the Cold War between the United States and Iran is heating up, and there's an expectation that next week the report coming out from the International Atomic Energy Agency will be fodder for hawks in Israel and in the United States, who have been calling for some time for a military strike against Iran. Apparently, the report will suggest that Iran has made real progress towards nuclear weaponry in terms of militarization of warheads and triggering. And so, first of all, is this a Cold War that will not get hot, or is this a Cold War that could get hot? Nada Hashimi.
Well, the danger of it getting hot is always there, but I think most experts in the region and analysts of U.S. foreign policy realize that any attempt to attack Iran militarily over its nuclear policy will lead to a regional catastrophe. It will lead to a regional war that will involve and threaten U.S. interests in the region. It will likely ignite a war on the Israel-Lebanon border, and that is really a nightmare scenario, and that there's no serious interest in starting a new war after 10 years of war in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I'm
no serious interest on the part of President Obama facing an election and not wanting in election year gasoline to be $10 a gallon. That's totally understandable. What about on the Israeli side? Netanyahu has been making, first of all the top intelligence people in Israel have gone public warning that he's out of control and determined. And go ahead. Sorry.
If you go back, you can go back to 1992 when Israel started to sort of raise the question of the Iranian threat. This is not something that's actually new, but it goes back almost 20 years now that Iran poses an existential threat to the region and to the United States. I think a lot of the rhetoric that we're hearing out of Israel today with respect to the question of Iran's nuclear program is really an attempt to get the United States to do its bidding, to get the United States and the Obama administration to continue to pressure Iran to try and limit its ability to project its power abroad, and to try and prevent any development of its nuclear program leading to a nuclear weapon. I don't think the Israelis are going to unilaterally attack Iran despite the right-wing sort of agenda of the Netanyahu government. One, because the United States has sent very clear messages that if Israel were to do that, it would threaten U.S. Foreign policy interests in the United States, and in particular, as you mentioned, it would threaten Obama's electoral possibilities next year. So I think this is largely bombastic rhetoric meant to sort of, pressure and create a suitable environment for the United States and its allies to continue to pursue sanctions and to try and limit Iran's nuclear potential.
Well, we know that there's tensions are heightened between the two countries over the assassination plot that the Attorney General announced a few weeks ago. My understanding is that even though it was seemed far-fetched, that people inside the Obama administration are insisting it's for real, it's not a psyop or anything like that. So if this is a real plot, then it does make one wonder whether the regime is unhinged in Tehran.
Yeah, no, it does raise serious questions. If the senior leadership of the Islamic Republic of Iran sort of has given a green light to its Revolutionary Guard forces to attack the Saudi ambassador on U.S. soil, that effectively would be a declaration of war, and it would suggest that something profoundly has changed within Tehran in terms of its national security calculus. I'm of the view that this assassination plot was very real, but it was really rogue elements within the Quds force, whose power has expanded quite tremendously over the last 5 years. We're engaging in discussions and conversations about a possible attack on the Saudi ambassador. I don't believe, and I don't think there's any evidence, that the senior leadership in Iran had signed off on this, given the consequences for the Islamic Republic of Iran, if this event were to happen and then Iran were to be blamed for it. One of the issues that I think needs to be sort of clearly stated is that despite the Islamic Republic of Iran being deeply repressive, deeply authoritarian, deeply anti-democratic, it's not a reckless regime. Its foreign policy has always been driven by a set of very clear decisions in terms of how Iran's interests in the region and the globe can be advanced. And so this type of activity does seem to be reckless. It does raise serious questions, and which is why I think the best explanation is that there were conversations that were taking place. There was some element within the Quds force that actually were talking about a possible Saudi plot. And the explanation can be also, you know, has to be understood in the context of deteriorating relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia over regional hegemony in the Middle East. There's been a significant deterioration in those relations. The WikiLeaks revelations, you know, remind us that the Saudis behind the scenes have been pressing and encouraging the Americans to quote the Saudi ambassador, to quote, cut off the head of the snake, meaning the Islamic Republic of Iran. So there's been a lot of, you know, back and forth.
But what you're suggesting here, Nada Hashemi, is that both Israel and Saudi Arabia are pressing the United States to do something about the Iranian regime. That's a pretty unusual, that's unusual in itself.
Well, yeah, they're trying to, I think the Israelis are trying to get the Americans to do their bidding and do their
And so are the Saudis, yeah.
Yeah, so are the Saudis, yeah, because everyone is, these are the main countries that are, you know, in competition for regional influence. There are tensions between all of them. The Iranians feel that they have been sort of targeted by the West in terms of assassinations of nuclear scientists on their territory. They blame there's a connection to the struggle for democracy in Iran as well here, that, you know, if you go back and you read the official explanation of how the Iranian regime tried to explain the rise of the Green Movement after the 2009 presidential election, and one famous statement, senior leaders of the regime blamed the CIA and the Saudis for allegedly giving, you know, millions of dollars to the opposition to stage these protests. I mean, no one seriously believes that, but, you know, in the rhetoric and the mindset of the loyal elements that support the Islamic Republic, people believe that the Saudis, the Israelis, and the Americans are playing hardball. And I think the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps was probably looking at a way of lashing out and responding to these perceived attacks.
Well, specifically, the attack that was supposed to have taken place, where a Mexican drug cartel hitman was supposed to blow up a restaurant in Georgetown that's the favorite restaurant of Ambassador Jabari, who's very close to the Saudi king. He's the guy that called for cutting off the head of the snake, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But this is supposed to take place, I believe, next Friday or Saturday, which is the beginning of the Hajj. And the idea was that they would provoke the Saudis into overreacting and beating up the Iranian pilgrims, which has happened before. So it wasn't just the way it's been portrayed in a lot of the press reports is it's a, you know, some crazy used car salesman down in Texas. There's more to it than that, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, the details of exactly what was being planned and how far these plans actually were developed, and most critically, how high up in the echelons of political power in Iran was their knowledge of this event, and have these, you know, senior elements of the Iranian regime, you know, supported the idea of an attack on the Saudi ambassador. All of those, I think, remain to be determined. I think when this thing goes to court, when the court case opens in the United States, I believe in December, when this used card salesman in Texas is supposed to be tried, then I think we're going to get, you know, a lot of these details are going to start to unravel, and we'll have a better sense of what's happening. But, you know, I wasn't surprised when I heard the revelations. I was a bit shocked, and in terms of, I had questions as to how far, you know, the supreme leader in Iran, who makes foreign policy decisions, was actually aware of this plot and was actually, or had actually signed on to it. But the fact that there are tensions between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and that they are privately planning attacks or calling for attacks on each other's country, that is not surprising, given how bad bad Iran-Saudi relations have deteriorated over the last couple of years.
Well, just in closing, Nada Hashimi, I want to get a sense from you, since you've written about the Green Movement, and we all witnessed the early Arab Spring, if you will, in Iran, that was brutally quashed by the government over rigged elections. There's tremendous dysfunction within the ruling elites. Clearly, the supreme leader is basically calling for Ahmadinejad's office to be removed. There's no more president, no more elections. That in itself is amazing. But what I'm hearing is that the Obama administration has a fairly aggressive foreign policy. They took out Osama bin Laden. There's no accident that Petraeus was sent over to head up the CIA. He's tasking the CIA to be more oriented towards special operations. They're on a roll. They had a success, in quotes, in Libya. No boots on the ground, air assets, local partners. They're doing the same thing in Somalia with the Ugandans and the Kenyans, boots on the ground, U.S. drones and air power and naval power on the side. So can they apply that model to Iran? I mean, they're clearly doing everything they can at the periphery to destabilize the country. And if the Nobel laureate says that the Green Movement are the burning embers under the ashes, there's something to work with inside of Iran, isn't there?
I agree. I think current U.S. foreign policy of pressure and sanctioning Iran have been a colossal failure. If you look at the results, they've strengthened the regime, they've weakened the middle class, they've weakened civil society. And more importantly, these sanctions, these pressures, you know, we've been sanctioning, the West has been sanctioning Iran for 30 years. Can anyone point to any serious change in Iranian behavior on those core issues that concern the West that have resulted from these sanctions? I think it's pretty clear that you cannot do so. And so I'm strongly in favor of a complete reorientation of U.S. foreign policy toward Iran that will focus on the theme of democracy. I think that's where the regime is most vulnerable. There's a lot of public discontent. There's a very long tradition of democracy activism in Iran. As you mentioned, I'm of the view that actually the precursor to the Arab Spring began in the summer of 2009 in Iran. I think that's fundamentally with respect to the question of, you know, Iran's nuclear program, this current regime in Iran is not going to give up on that program, regardless of how much they're sanctioned or threatened. The only way that one can envision perhaps a changing Iranian foreign policy with respect to the nuclear program is in the aftermath of a democratic transition, where a new Green Movement-led government will be willing to work with the international community to resolve this issue. That's the only, I think, you know, hope that exists in terms of changing Iranian foreign policy on this particular point. And that's why I think, you know, Fareed Zakaria was actually right. He was in Tehran a couple of weeks ago, came back and has been writing and speaking a lot about this on his CNN program, saying that what the Obama administration really needs to do is to actually look for new strategies to even try and engage the Iranian government, not because the government of Iran will actually respond, but I think that will actually shake up and destabilize the regime in Iran. The question of a dialogue with the United States is a deeply divisive issue within the Islamic Republic. The current strategy of, you know, sanctioning, threatening, quarantining, ostracizing Iran is not helping the United States. It's not helping the Iranian people. And I think, you know, we need a completely new reorientation and new direction for U.S. foreign policy, one that focuses on the question of democracy and asks ourselves at every step of the way, does this policy pursue and assist a democratic transition in Iran or not? I don't see Obama sort of pursuing that policy in the lead up to the next presidential election, but I'm hoping that if he gets elected again, that perhaps he'll begin to start a major review of U.S. foreign policy, because the current policy isn't working.
I thank you so much for joining us here today, Nader Hashimi.
Thanks a lot.
Again, I've been speaking with Nader Hashimi. He's a professor of Middle East and Islamic politics at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He's the author of Islam, Secularism, and Liberal Democracy, Towards a Democratic Theory for Muslim Societies, and co-editor of a new book, The People Reloaded, The Green Movement, and the Struggle for Iran's Future.